Good morning. This is Jan Kane with the Champaign News Gazette, dated Wednesday, January 10th. And we'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Nursing Home for Sale. The byline is by Tom Kasich. Champaign County Board members voted Tuesday night to put the county nursing home up for sale. By a margin of 13-8, with Democrats Patsy Petrie of Champaign, Pius Weibel, and Shana Jo Cruz joining all 10 Republicans, the board voted to issue a request for proposals from private operators to purchase the county-owned facility in East Urbana. Champaign Democrat Geraldo Rosales was absent from the meeting. Weibel, chair of the county board, said he voted for the sale because continuing to operate the nursing home for a full year would threaten other parts of county government. If we were to keep the nursing home, we'd be struggling to find money for it, he said. It's money. We don't have the money to do it. Either we keep the nursing home going or we lay off other people. The vote came after about 45 minutes of public input from opponents and supporters of selling the nursing home, including Nursing Home Advisory Board member Kathy Emanuel, who said that there are positive trends at the facility and that the county could increase its value by keeping it open. But Republican former county board member Scott Tapley contended the home has lost money for years and would continue to do so. Jennifer Putman, a 30-year veteran of the county board, attended both the Republican and Democratic caucus meetings to plead with board members to not sell the home. The ship is turning around, Putman told the Democratic caucus. We can continue to allow SAK, the private manager of the home, to turn the nursing home around and see the positive results that would come from keeping our public nursing home public. But an updated report from County Auditor Diane Michaels, distributed to board members Tuesday, said that the nursing home now owes more than $5.5 million to vendors and to the county government, an increase of more than $375,000 from a month earlier. It owes $2.8 million to outside vendors and $2.7 million to various county accounts, Michaels said. Following the public input, board members debated the sale for another 50 minutes. If you're voting for a for-profit nursing home, you are voting to exploit staff members that are currently part of our county class, said Champaign Democrat Stephanie Furtado. This idea that we somehow have to choose between the financial solvency of the county and selling the nursing home is not accurate. We could, if we all work together, come up with actual solutions. I just think we haven't been willing to. Mahomet Republican Jim Goss said that it costs about $100,000 each day to operate the county government, and we're down to $3.2 million in the county general fund. Do the math, 32 days, that's what it is, because we have given away $2.5 million. But Champaign Democrat Kyle Patterson argued that the nursing home provides a valuable service to the community. I'm sick and tired of this discussion of losing money, he said. Do we go, oh no, tonight we're going to lose $3,000 to the state's attorney's office, and all we got out of it was expert testimony in three child abuse cases? Mahomet Republican Brooks March said he believed you can get better care from a private home than we're giving them today in this home. Under the terms of sale, the minimum bid for the nursing home would be $11 million, and any proposals for the purchase would be due by February 28th. A timeline listed in the request for proposals says that the sale process would be completed by May 1st. Among the terms for any sale of the nursing home, it would require yes votes from at least 15 members of the 22-member county board. The purchaser must agree to maintain a skilled nursing facility with 220 beds, and any additional permitted uses are limited to a geriatric center, long-term care facility, or assisted living facility. The restrictions would remain in place until December 31st of 2027. The purchaser would assume the existing collective bargaining agreement between the nursing home and the AFSCME union. The purchaser must agree to rehire all existing employees who pass a background check, not terminate 10% or more of the employees within the first 60 days following the closing date, and not 20% or more of the current employees during the first 6 months after the closing date, all at their current salary levels with benefits similar to those currently received. Priority for admissions would be given to Champaign County residents for 10 years. Bidders would also have to address future admissions policies and would have to set aside a minimum of 50% of the licensed long-term facility beds to Medicaid payees for at least 10 years. The purchaser would have to spell out how it would work with and be accountable to the community. In October, the county board voted down a motion to issue a request from private companies for the purchase of the home. The move failed 11-11, with Petrie and the 10 Republican board members voting for it and all 11 other Democrats voting against it. Last April, voters gave the county board authority to sell the nursing home by a margin of 54% to 46%. But Democrats have contended that voters in their districts opposed selling the home, while mostly rural Republican voters supported the idea. Following the vote to put the home up for sale, the board quickly approved issuing about $1 million in tax anticipation warrants to help cover retirement fund costs for nursing home employees and to renew $500,000 in loans from the County General Corporate Fund to the nursing home. Also Tuesday night, the board seated John Clifford of Rantoul to succeed Michaels as a county board member representing District 2 in the northeast quadrant of the county. Our next article pertains to the Martin Luther King Jr. celebration coming up. The headline is Selflessness is Central to Her Message. Tap In Academy CEO will be keynote speaker at Friday's celebration. The byline is Adalberto Toledo. Sally Carter hasn't had much time to think about what she'll say when she delivers the keynote address at Friday's countywide Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration. The CEO of Champaign's Tap In Leadership Academy spent the weekend and first part of this week tending to her father, who suffered a mild stroke, and to her niece, who had prolonged exposure to carbon monoxide. And her phone is broken. It was frustrating, she said, to have to tend to her family while also having a great responsibility to so many people hanging in the back of her head. But in the middle of the stressful time, she said she found a way to center herself, even if she had to fight through to it. Even when everything's coming at you, you have to figure out a way to find that center, she said. It's so easy to focus on the negative, but that's not me. Sitting at the Champaign Public Library on Tuesday, the West Chicago-born educator thought of the pressure she feels to get it right on Friday. Carter thought also about the pushing and pulling Martin Luther King Jr. faced at the height of the civil rights movement. Some demanded tougher action, she said. Others wanted more suppressed submission to the status quo. In the end, it was the center that won, much like it was the center that brought her calm amid the stresses of family, work, and the responsibility to her community that she sees in Friday's celebration at Urbana's Vineyard Church. Above all, she reflected on 2018. It has now been 50 years since Dr. King's death. "I'm proud of our progress," Carter said. "We took a hold of Dr. King's dream and made it our own. It's easy to think about what hasn't happened, but personally, I'm not striving for that level of perfection." It's not that there isn't a place for loud protests, she said. Carter doesn't often participate in them, but there's a side of her that strives to be like Malcolm X and seeks more radical alternatives to the slow progress of 21st century black movements. "But a step back and calm devotion to change," she said, "brings more than violence ever could. We win more support when we do it in love," she said, "when we do it by caring about people, and especially when we remove ourselves and our own agendas. It's not about what Sally wants, it's about what's best for everybody." Selflessness and devotion to community are among the cornerstones of Tap In, the nonprofit Carter oversees. The academic enrichment organization focuses on teaching cultural awareness and learning through public service. She believes service learning, going out and shaping the community, is the best way to breed the world's new leaders. "We are all leaders in some capacity," she said. "That's something I really want to hammer in." In thinking about how the black community can move forward a half century after Dr. King's death, she said an organized front is important. Carter fears that the freedoms and accomplishments wrought from the civil rights movement without proper leadership will crumble with chaotic radicalism. She said she disagreed with one proposed 21st century leader, Cornel West. The political activist and social critic has pushed black movements to the left and would like to see radical change of the status quo. But she admonishes any leadership based on what she believes is fear. "It is never a good idea to lead any kind of organization with fear and violence, she said. All you get is more fear and violence. We should always be concerned and on alert, yes, but if you're always preparing for war, you never look back at the progress you've made. Instead, Carter said, there needs to be more personal accountability. The power and sense of control that activists didn't have in Dr. King's day is something she believes is taken for granted now. She wants everyone to be accountable for their actions, or lack thereof. The radical ideas of West and others, she said, are pure adrenaline. She prefers passion. Adrenaline fades away, she said. Passion does not. Our next article pertains to the upcoming Brent Christensen trial. The headline is, Prosecutors Refute Defense's Evidence Claims. The byline is Ben Zeiderman. Rebutting an attempt to bar expert testimony from the government in trial, prosecutors said today they have provided more forensic analysis than is required to the attorneys of accused kidnapper and killer Brent Christensen. Christensen's attorneys argued last week that prosecutors failed to provide them with such analyses by the court-ordered December 15th deadline, only providing one set of test results from the FBI's lab in Quantico, Virginia. They also said they didn't receive summaries of expert testimony that meet the requirements laid out in the Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure. In his response, interim U.S. Attorney John Childress said witness statements aren't required and that the government has more than met the requirements, providing the defendant with more than 500 pages of DNA and blood evidence, a hard disk drive containing vast amounts of raw electronic evidence, a copy of the fingerprint analysis report, law enforcement reports, and cell phone records. In this case, the United States has responded to every request from defense counsel and believes it has done so in a cooperative manner, Childress wrote. Moreover, the assistant United States attorneys assigned to the case have met with defense counsel on each and every occasion they have requested a meeting. While some of the analysis wasn't provided by the December 15th deadline, Childress said, that's because FBI analysts didn't complete those specific reports by the deadline. Even if the government did fail to meet the requirements, prosecutors took issue with the proposed solution, to bar expert testimony, rather than to receive the forensic analyses at a later time or to delay the trial. The defendant's requested remedy is unwarranted and would inhibit the jury in its truth-seeking function, Childress wrote. In their response, prosecutors listed each of the expert witnesses they notified the defense that they may call and what they have provided Christensen's lawyers about these witnesses. Prosecutors said they informed the defense counsel verbally about DNA and blood findings September 8th when Christensen's lawyers were appointed. Prosecutors said they then provided the defense a summary of the FBI biologist's report November 24th, and on December 14th, the underlying reports, bench notes, printouts, and other information. In this case, it should be no surprise to the defendant that the United States intends to present the testimony of a DNA and serological blood expert at trial, Childress wrote. Prosecutors said they also provided electronic evidence November 28th from phones and computers the FBI seized. This included a detailed timeline made by a forensic examiner of Christensen's computer-related and online activities. Based on the disclosures of the United States, it should not be a surprise to the defense that the United States intends to present the testimony of the FBI computer forensic examiners at trial regarding the evidence they downloaded, Childress wrote. The FBI has previously said it believes Christensen visited, in April 2017, threads on a fetish website titled Perfect Abduction Fantasy and Planning a Kidnapping, in a forum called Abduction 101. Christensen was arrested June 30, 2017, on kidnapping charges in the June 9th disappearance of visiting University of Illinois scholar Yingying Zhang of China. Later, the government amended the charge to kidnapping resulting in death, though Ms. Zhang's body has not been found. Christensen is also charged with making false statements. Prosecutors also said they provided a report of fingerprint analysis, along with a CD containing bench notes, printouts, and copies of the fingerprints, to the defense counsel on December 27th, after the December 15th deadline. This was because the FBI fingerprint analyst didn't complete his work until December 19th, after the deadline, according to the prosecutors. They also downplayed the importance of this evidence. Frankly, the fingerprint evidence is not particularly important to the prosecution's case, but it does show the thoroughness of the FBI investigation, Childress wrote. Prosecutors said they included canine handlers on their expert witness list because the FBI used them to conduct canine searches. Prosecutors said those searches were documented in law enforcement reports that were provided to the defense counsel September 13th. As set forth in the reports, two of those searches did not result in any indication by the canines, while one of those searches did, Childress wrote. Additionally, prosecutors said cell phone records were disclosed to the defense October 18th, and they said they used forensic video and audio experts to enhance various recorded conversations and video images. Prosecutors also said they may bring in an FBI linguist and an expert on Chinese culture to testify in a potential rebuttal. While the United States has not been made aware of any theory of defense in this case, it is aware that in some cases a defendant attempts to blame the victim for the defendant's crime, Childress wrote. With that in mind, they said they may call FBI linguist Maura Golden to testify regarding the Chinese to English translation of writings of the victim in this case, and a University of Illinois professor regarding Chinese culture and the victim's expected actions in this case. Christensen's trial is scheduled to begin February 27th, and the government has until February 1st to decide whether to seek the death penalty, a decision ultimately made by U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. If that were to happen, Childress wrote, an unopposed defense motion to continue is anticipated, which U.S. District Court Judge Colin Bruce has said he would welcome. Next, we'll turn to Tom Kasich's mailbag. The headline is, Retiring Rep Gives His Unvarnished Take. Retiring State Rep Chad Hayes promised the most unvarnished presentation of my career at Monday's meeting of the active senior Republicans of Champaign County, and he pretty much delivered. You didn't have to be a senior, a Republican, or someone from Champaign County to be entertained and enlightened by what the Catlin Republican, who a year from now will be a former state representative, had to say about Illinois government and politics. Some of these quotes are from Hayes' presentation, and some are from an interview afterward. On last July's votes to enact a state income tax increase and to give Illinois a budget for the first time in more than 30 months, among those supporting at least parts of the plan were about two dozen Republicans, including Hayes. The fact of the matter is that had we not done something, the income tax rate would have been much higher than it is now. The unpaid bills would have been around toward $25 billion, headed toward $30 billion. Let that wash over you for a minute. We only had $15 billion of unpaid bills. If it gets to $25 or even $30 billion, the entire general revenue budget is only $36 billion. We could have been facing a situation at the end of this fiscal year where the unpaid bills in this state were as high as the general revenue taken in by the state. Can you imagine such a thing? The estimated bill backlog Tuesday was $8.9 billion. Hayes again disputed the claim advanced by some Republicans that the GOP lawmakers who broke ranks and worked with Democrats on the tax and budget issue overturned work being done by other Republicans. From my perspective, I hung in there a long, 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 long time, and we were no closer to a budget the 1st of July last year than on the day the governor took office. We were not. Anyone who tells you that wasn't there, and if they were there, they weren't in a room where the negotiation was actually happening. And I've told those people that to their face. They know it. I'm very upset that I was in that position. I was extraordinarily upset to this day that the people in leadership and even the governor didn't work out a budget. It's untenable. However, if I had to be the adult in the room, so be it. Sometimes you look in the mirror and you say, those things that I taught my children for all those years, am I going to live it out when the going gets tough, and am I going to stand up and make a decision that could be career-ending, or am I just going to go on and allow the forest fire to rage? I decided I'm not going to, and I'm not even looking for everybody to say you did the right thing. On Rauner's role in the tax and budget deal. Why would he veto the bill so quickly? The House passed the tax and spending plan on July 2nd, Rauner vetoed it on July 4th, and the House overrode the vetoes on July 6th. He had 45 days, because he didn't want the legislature leaving town without overriding a veto. He needed a budget, too. When he got a budget and he didn't have to touch it and he was able to blast it in campaign rhetoric until the next election, he fell out of the political lucky tree and hit every branch on the way down. On the difficulty of being in the Republican minority for his 7 years in Springfield. From the minority, any candidate who tells you that we're just going to go over there and we're going to tell them how it's done and we're going to crack them in the back of the head with a 2x4, because if we hit them hard enough, they're going to come around to our way of thinking, that sounds great. But the likelihood of that happening with the headcount the way it is in the General Assembly, a 67-51 Democratic advantage in the House, 37-22 Democrats in the Senate, is non-existent. This notion that we're going to go over there and hit a 3-run home run and we're going to drive everybody in while in the minority is fool's gold. Let me tell you how it really happens in the minority, using a baseball analogy. You beat out an infield hit, you steal second, and you bunt the guy to third, and you score on a wild pitch, and you plant your flag in the ground, and you take the progress you made, and you live to fight another day. That's reality. On Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan's control issues. One of the things you're going to hear this whole campaign season, and you've heard for years, is we need to raise the minimum wage, and we need a progressive income tax, and this and that, and whatever. I find it interesting that none of those things, despite in Governor Pat Quinn's last term, they had the governor and a veto-proof majority in the House and Senate, they had all the votes, and yet none of those things is the law of the land. I find it fascinating. Why is that? He doesn't care about those things. He needs those issues alive politically because he believes in the city particularly that those things are important and they can continue to wave that banner. If he made them the law of the land when he had all the votes, the issue goes away for them. The issue alive for him is more important for him than being the law of the land. On the upcoming gubernatorial election, likely between wealthy Republican Bruce Rauner and wealthy Democrat J.B. Pritzker. Unfortunately, I predict that the governor's campaign is going to be the most expensive in United States history. I think you can see north of $300 million spent in the governor's race. It will be an ugly, out-in-the-alley brawl. I think the citizenry of our state will be crying uncle by the 4th of July, just praying that it's over soon. But the stakes are very high. If a Republican is not victorious, we once again will go into a redistricting process in 2021 with no goaltender to stop a Democratic-drawn redistricting map. On the need for redistricting reform, this is a fight worth fighting. We fight it until we knock that door in, he said, predicting that once it finally passes constitutional muster and gets on the ballot in Illinois, it passes with a minimum of 75% voting yes. On what might happen once Madigan is no longer Speaker, a post he has held for all but 2 years since 1983. If we Republicans can get up to maybe 55, 56 members, remember you need 60 votes to become Speaker, the Republicans in a post-Mike Madigan era might be in a position to play a role like the Republicans have done repeatedly here with the chairmanship of the county, Champaign County Board. If we can't elect one of our own Speaker, we can partner with some of the willing on the other side of the aisle to get somebody that we can do business with. Three times in a 14-year period minority Republicans on the county board helped elect a Democrat who was not the choice of the Democratic caucus. On Madigan's remarkable ability to stay in power, Mike Madigan came together largely with union blue-collar Democrats from the city, Chicago machine Democrats in the 70s. That's the girl he brought to the dance, so to speak. 40 years later, the people who are winning the seats in the city, ironically, look nothing like Mike Madigan. They're way to the left of Mike Madigan. They consider themselves hardcore, new-wave progressives, and that he's been able to hold together in his own party, despite the fact that the people in his own party look like nothing like the folks that brought him to power, is just as remarkable as the fact that he's been Speaker for 40 years. That begs the question, how much longer can he hold on? It will be very interesting as we go forward. How many on his own side of the aisle, young, minorities, well-educated, articulate, are going to continue to allow themselves to be under the thumb of Mike Madigan. I think this era is going to come to an end sooner than later. On his own last year in the House. I'm going to be very outspoken, Hayes said. I'm going to call out the hypocrisy there. Some Democrats, he said, think that the newly liberated Republicans are going to want to poke the governor in the eye. No, that's not going to happen. I said that these Republicans aren't going to check their values at the door. But I would say that if there is a willingness on workers' comp reform, we might have the leverage to do it without a second-floor governor's office blessing. There were some people who had been working on that subject for a long time that were very frustrated that a deal couldn't be cut to make progress on that in the last year or so. Here's a new way, at least around here, for a politician to raise money. Jen McMillan, a Democratic candidate for the Illinois House in the 101st House District, is hosting a 101 Laughs comedy night at Sliders Bar in Long Creek at 8:30 February 10th. Tickets are $35 each or $50 for a couple. Two local comedians, Jeremy Hughes and Larry Smith, will supply the laughs. McMillan is the only Democrat running in the district now held by Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth. Three Republicans are seeking to succeed him. Now we'll turn to letters from the readers. Last month, the News Gazette ran the stories of two men, Mark Johnson and Jim Turpin. As I know, these two men have touched countless lives during their respective careers. Mine is one of those lives. As a younger man, I met these two men at a restaurant I worked at. They befriended me and have had a great influence in my life. I will greatly miss these two men, as I am sure our community will as well. I pray they continue to be part of my life. Their counsel has been priceless. Signed, James D. Jones from Urbana. The next one is entitled, Employees Have Served Township Well. I wanted to write a quick letter of support for Jamie Willard and Kim Hooper, who were recently fired from their longtime positions at the Cunningham Township Assessor's Office. I had the pleasure of working with these two individuals while employed as a Champaign County Board of Review member and also for a short time as interim supervisor of assessments for Champaign County after the resignation of Joe Meents. Jamie and Kim, along with Deputy Assessor Katie Moore, have exemplified public service during their time with Cunningham Township. They have come to work even when their prior boss often didn't. They have treated the people of Urbana fairly and always responded to requests for help or the needs of the township or Champaign County. It is a very sad day for the people of Urbana with the loss of these two individuals from their positions in the township, and it will take months, maybe even years, to replace their knowledge of the city, its businesses, and its people. Signed, Mark Witsit of Mahomet. Our last letter is entitled, Marijuana Solves Many Problems. The January 4th News Gazette editorial about marijuana stated that medical experts dispute claims that marijuana has unique healing properties. Perhaps a small percentage believe this, but very few can deny that it eases pain and suffering for a variety of illnesses ranging from migraines to cancer. The government can save lives and money by substituting natural cannabis for dangerous opioids. Alcohol is often at the root of many assaults, rapes, and other violent crimes. Pot has a calming effect, and if substituted, could reduce these. And how do you spot the driver on marijuana? They are usually driving too slowly and too cautiously. Those against complete legalization for this God-given plant have never tried it. Signed, Chris Hansen of Urbana. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette, dated Wednesday, January 10th. Please stay tuned.